Yeah, I was walking out of yeshiva last night. I met Rabbi Kauf on the stairs going up to the parking lot. Ended up hopping a ride to the bus stop with him. But I asked him, knew how's it going? So he said, well, you know, whatever. Trying to get everybody grounded again. It's been an interesting week. It's a funny thing, because when you cut it down to the bare essentials, I mean, like, how much of a change really was it? You know, you had regular morning Seder. In theory, second Seder, the same amount of hours. Okay, I didn't have a break. So if you want to cut yourself some slack and come half an hour late, you know, very understandable. And then you have two nights, Sakakol, it's like two nights, right? Two evenings where, you know, you're busy with this thing and, you know, how much should it really, you know, smack you in the face. But we all know the reality of it. The reality is that it throws you off of kilter. Because it's not just the couple of hours and the slight changes in your day, and it's not just the two nights, but it's just, it changes your whole center of gravity and your whole mindset. You got all this frenetic energy going around. And, you know, instead of thinking about what you're normally thinking about, so you're thinking about, okay, who do I have to call next? And how much did this one give, and how much did that one give, and what am I up to, and what am I not up to, and the whole story. You know, it changes your whole mindset. That throws you off. Natural, that should throw you off. You got to get grounded again. But I had the following ha'ara, really for myself, but I think it applies to everybody. I mean, the way that, you know, I do my thing is that I send out a letter to my email lists, who, you know, whatever, get Divrei Torah, different types of different Divrei Torah from me, and, you know, tell them what's going on, and enclose a link, and, you know, hopefully I get back. The more classic way of doing it is, if you really want something in life, the best way is to visit somebody in person. The next best way after that is you call them up on the telephone, right? Maybe a telephone with a screen is even better than that, I don't know. But in the old days, in person, if not that, telephone, right? So you tend to think that when you send out a letter, or that when you call somebody on the phone and you're successful, you know, so like, all right, you know, so I did it. I solicited that ad. I got it. He gave it to me. I was successful. In mine, it's, you know, it's a little harder to think that, because what did I do? I sent out a letter, you know, but really, for everything, it's like that. But what do we do? We're Zoreya. We put down seeds. Anybody who puts down seeds does hishtadlus, and, you know, the seeds, they could grow, and they could be mefarnes him for a year. Be mefarnes him for more than a year. He could have a very big farm, and then, you know, he can make lots of money being a farmer, and, you know, support a whole family, support, you know, whatever. He could be very successful at that. But after he puts down the seeds, then what needs to happen? So then the rain has to happen, and there has to be sunshine, and the winds have to be right. And if he's sensible about it, he realizes that just planting the seeds is not really what did it. I did my part, and then the rest of it, you know, came from up above. I did mine down here on the Aretz, but it was really Shemayim that was mashlim, the whole endeavor. Rav Noch Weinberg used to say, you know, if you think about it, he goes, we can't even lift a finger. What do you do? What do you do? How do you lift your finger? It is, explain it to me. But you have a rutzen that you want your finger to go up, and you know in your mind this is it. It just goes. But where do you get that koach from? But somehow we make that division. We think that whatever's down on this earth that we're doing, that's where it ends. And that what needs to come from Shemayim, the kochos from Shemayim, the rain from Shemayim, the thoughts from Shemayim, the Masera from Shemayim, the Matan Torah from Shemayim, oh, that's there by itself. It's a big mistake. It's a big mistake. But not only is it a big mistake, but I think that we'll see today that it's the big mistake. And that if we make that mistake, the Zera Kaddish, all kinds of other spooky Makaris that say that that is the key to destruction. Thinking that I'm doing it and that I have no hookup up above, so then that's the destruction of a person, is a destruction of society, is a destruction of humanity. And we all know that this week that's what happens, at least you know, in Klal Yisrael. There's a certain group in Klal Yisrael that gets destroyed. And it's because of Machlekes. But I think that we'll soon see that Machlekes is not exactly the Machlekes that we all imagined it to be. Machlekes is a lot deeper than that, and there's another dynamic. And that's what ultimately leads to Korach's destruction. Now, Korach is a very, very exciting parsha, a very, very scary parsha, and a lot of mussar in that parsha. After the Rosh Hashiva's ferocious shmooze last night, a very intense shmooze, you know, talking all about, you know, jealousy and needing to be number one and machlokes and all of this and everything. I went to the base medrash, and there's a first year guy, and he says, "Yeah, sure, everybody knows somebody like that, you know," and it's true. I mean, all the things you learn about in this parsha and how it destroyed Korach, it's very, very relatable. If not to yourself, then to somebody else. Okay, I've seen there, been there, done that, seen that, you know, whatever. That's Korach. But Korach, you know, whatever, a lot of parts of the Korach parsha that everybody delves into and goes into Korach's whole philosophy. He's the first Democrat in the world, Kol Amkul and Kedoshim, B'Sechem Hashem, Beged Shekula Techeles, everybody is the same, you don't need a Moshe Rabbeinu. There's one aspect of the whole Korach story I think is a lot less talked about, but there's a Musar Haskell over here also, and that's how Korach actually dies. Korach's death, his demise. Korach gets swallowed up by the earth. Vatiftach ha'aretz espia, the earth opens up its mouth, vativla oisam, and swallows up Korach v'espateim v'eskola adam ashalo Korach v'eskola rechush. Korach gets swallowed up by the ground. Everybody else in the world, from the time of Adam Arishin, so they die, and then they get put back into the ground. That's like the natural place for a goof. But Korach, even when he has his neshama, even when he's alive, the ground swallows him up. There's one other time that we see this, not that happening to, but you know, at least the phrase. We say it every day during davening. Notisa yemincha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say it in the Shira. You stretched out your right hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, against the Mitzrim, Tivla Emay Aretz. The earth swallowed him up. What's this concept of the earth swallowing up somebody alive, and why is that the most appropriate einish for Korach and also for the Mitzrim? Another question. First pasuk, Vayikach Korach. Everybody familiar because Korach, what do you mean Vayikach Korach? It doesn't say what he took. So the Targum says Vayikach doesn't mean he took. Vayikach says v'ispilig Korach. Korach split off. He became a bar machlokes. And you take a look at the Zohar HaKadosh. It says that was the etzem mahus of Korach. Korach was a bar machlokes, and Korach, since he destroyed Shalom, and Shalom is the essential component in the world, Shalom is Shem Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why Korach deserved to get destroyed. Ispilig bar machlokes, no shalom, gets destroyed. But then there's something wacky also on this ispilig. I think I might have talked about this last year. There's a crazy Rabbeinu Bachya that says, where else do you have ispilig in the Torah? Ispilig, it doesn't say it in the pasuk, but there's a haflaga. What's haflaga? Haflaga we have in the Torah. You have a din of yachleku. But what's the story of haflaga? There's a dor haflaga. Says Rabbeinu Bachya that Korach is midor haflaga haya. He is from the dor haflaga. He's a sarid, he's a remnant of the dor haflaga. I don't know whether it means that his neshama was from the dor haflaga. But there's an aspect of the Dor HaFlogah that's in Korach. Korach was the Ispelig, and the Dor HaFlogah, they split apart. Okay, but here's the kasha. Dor HaFlogah, how they split apart? Split apart because they were all together, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vayofetz, right? He split them all up. That's the Dor HaFlogah. They all dispersed because they became people of different languages, different tongues, and therefore they all split apart. Was it their fault? No, it wasn't their fault. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it to them. They had no machlekes whatsoever. That's exactly the opposite of Korach. Korach is the Ispelig. He's the Bar Machlekes. He's the one who takes on Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. He gets everybody fighting against each other. The famous Shtikel Torah, Korach Va'adosei, he was even fighting with his Eda. All the people are fighting with each other. So what do you mean that Korach was Midor HaFlogah? The Dor HaFlogah didn't fight. The Dor HaFlogah was just dispersed. And Korach was a fighter. He fought with all the other people. So how is Korach and Dor HaFlogah the same? And what does this have to do with the Midah of the Ispelig that there's no Shalom? And the third Nakuda over here, the third Nakuda is really about what the Zera Kaddish says, that when there's no Shalom, so you destroy HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, you're going to be destroyed, the world gets destroyed. Very interesting thing. A famous Gemara in Shabbos, you know, people, there's such a musig in life called, you know, mikveh talk. People go to the mikveh, Erev Shabbos, you know, the earlier generation, you know, these older people, they go to the mikveh, you know, you schmooze in the mikveh, all the Lashon Hara comes out of the mikveh. I remember one time when I was a bacher, so it's like you go to the mikveh and you hear somebody say to somebody else, "No, so what are you guys learning in yeshiva?" And you're like, "Turn around, that is not here. You know, that's not what you're supposed to talk about in the mikveh." But you know, other things you're not supposed to say in the mikveh. If a guy's name is Shalom in the mikveh, it's a problem calling him by his first name. You're not allowed to say the word Shalom in the mikveh. Why is Zagli Gemara in Shabbos? Because Shalom is Shmoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Asks the Gemara, well, what about saying Emes? What about saying Chanun? What about saying Rachum? All the other Kinuyim? No problem. Why? Because Emes, Chanun, Rachum, these are not Hashem's name. But Shalom, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. What in the world does that mean? Emes is Cheshem Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chanun, Kikel Chanun, Rachum, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom, okay, he causes peace in the world. Very nice. We don't want people to fight with each other. What does it mean? Hashem is Shalom. He's Be'etzem Shalom. And the rest of it, that's just descriptive, but that's not really who he is. You say such a thing. Why do we say that Shalom is a shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and these other things are not? So, three things that we have to analyze over here. Number one, what's the symbol being swallowed, the Mitzrim and Korach? And number two, why is the Ispelig, why is the Chalukah of Korach, the very same Chalukah that you have with the Dor HaFlogah, seems to be very different? And what does that got to do with Shalom? And Shalom is Shmoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is it Shmoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And how does it all fit together? And what's it really mean to us that Shalom is the thing, connection of what we do down here and up above, that's the thing. So Be'ez Hashem will see very soon. I want to tell you guys a funny story. It really happened. It happened this week. My sister Shehaya, my son Yehuda, already you met. So one of the highlights of his year, of his life, is that every year he goes to camp here. Ezer Mitzion, it's a chesed organization. See, they're doing a bone marrow drive over here. So they have a summer camp for special needs kids, and he's been going since, you know, since he was about bar mitzvah age. That's when he started going to the sleepaway. And it's interesting, we try to keep it quiet, because whenever he sees the forms and he recognizes right away the emblem, he recognizes the emblem and he knows, that's my camp, I'm going to camp. So like that's sort of like when it ends, because he knows you applied to camp and I got accepted to camp. And I'm going to camp, right? So from that time on, he's going to start taking out his suitcase. And every time he's on the street and he sees a car that says Ezer Mitzion, he starts pointing to the emblem on the car and saying, bye-bye, I'm out of here, you know, whatever. I want to go to camp. And so we try to keep it, you know, very quiet. Well, 2 weeks ago, so we put in his application. And we got, what's it called? We got the acceptance. And he, of course, you know, because we sent the form to his Rebbe and everything, so he knows I'm going to camp. And he's already starting up last Thursday. Okay, new, we're going upstairs 5 times a day to get the suitcase. And, you know, I'm going to camp. Let's go. Camp is in a month and a half. Yehuda, we're not going to camp yet. You know, month and a half is a month and a half. And he explained it to him over and over again. He doesn't want to hear it. He wants to go now. That's it. My daughter comes up with a brilliant idea. She says, you know what? We're going to make him one of these, you know, they call it here when somebody's getting married, they make a chart for Sfiras HaGomer, they call it. You know, where you have a countdown, and every single day you check off a box, and that way you know that by the time it's finished, that's when you're going. So she says, we're going to make him a chart, and every day we're going to put on a sticker, and then he's going to see that when we get to the end of the chart, that's the time to go to camp. Great. Fine. She spends an hour, Matzei Shabbos, she puts it up on the door, she brings him over and says, Yehuda, we're putting on a sticker. He's all excited, we're putting on a sticker. At the end, we're going to the camp. Great. We go to sleep, we're all happy. We didn't realize he's much smarter than all of us. In the middle of the night, Yehuda got up, went downstairs, and when we got up in the morning, we awoke to find the chart with a sticker on every single box on the entire sign. And he says, I'm going to camp, right? I outsmarted all you guys. You told me that when it's finished, I go to camp. Poseidon, that's it. We're finished. Okay. We're all laughing. We thought it was hysterical. And he goes off to school. And of course, during the course of the day, so, you know, my daughter, me, my wife, whatever, whatever, peeling off of the stickers so that he can go back home. Okay, it was a nice joke, but we still have a month and a half to camp. Now, here's the sad part of the story. He comes back into the house, and he closes the door, and the first thing he does is he looks at the stickers, and he realizes that it's not there. He was mortified. He was absolutely mortified. He lost it. He just totally lost it. He started whimpering and whatever. He's like, what are you doing to me? Now it's time to go. And you just changed everything. You changed my whole life. How could that be? I explained to him, you know, we really are going, but it's a month and a half or whatever it is. He got over it. Okay, we'll see. Maybe by Shabbos he's going to be pulling out the suitcase again. We'll see at the end of the day whether the sign works or whether the sign doesn't work. What I took out of this is, and I think it's a Musar Haskil for everybody, we all live in our own reality. We all live in our own reality. In his reality, as soon as you fill in all of the boxes over there, as soon as you put all stickers, that means it's finished. I'm going to camp. It doesn't matter whether it's a month and a half later or whether it's today. We told you, listen, fill in all the stickers every time one day. By the time it's finished, you're going to camp. Fine, they're all filled in. And then you took off the stickers. So what'd you do? You killed me. You took away some. You changed the whole reality over there. But it's not true. Whether we look at it that way or not, that's not really relevant. There is such a thing, which is the real truth. And even though the way that it seems to us may be one thing, if the truth of the matter is that it's something entirely different, so that's what we have to live with. And that's the problem. That's the problem that Korach had. And that's the problem that we all have very often, is that we base our reality on the way that things look to us down here with all of the stickers. And we say that what we have down here, that's really all that it is. And it's all self-contained. And we don't need any help from anywhere else. But we all know that that's not true. Because all we can do in this world is we can put down seeds. But without the rain, and without the wind, and without the sun, and without the Ratzon Hashem, that's the way that it's supposed to be, then nothing grows, and no money comes in. And the reality is that we can't do anything by ourselves. The stickers don't really do it. It's the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being mashlim and making the whole thing work. Rav Moshe Shapiro says that the reason that Shalom is Shmoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's Be'etzem HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, Whereas all of these other things, emes and chanun and rachum, are not. They're just qualities. Is because down in this world, you can have people who are truthful. Right? You can have people who are truthful. You will find truth in the world. Eretz mi, emes mi, eretz titzmach. You can have truth in the world. Maybe not too often, but it's possible. You can have people who are bali chesed. You can have people who are bali rachamim. And it exists. But shalom, true peace, and I'm not just talking about true peace that people get along, because everybody really wants something else, and the people are always going to be at odds with each other. The only way to really get everybody together in unison is if everybody just wants what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Asei Ritzaincha Kiritzainoi. I'm not even talking about that. That's true also. But shalom, which is Milashon Shleimus, to be mashlim something, that doesn't exist in this world. Anything that we do can only come to its shleimus. Everything that we do in this world can only come to its completion, to its total harmony, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu partakes in it as well. So we do our thing, but then HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to inspire it. And then it harmonizes, it becomes the Davar Shalem, and that's the Midah of Shalem. Korach was not just fighting with other people. Korach was fighting against a particular thing and really against a particular person. He was fighting against Moshe Rabbeinu, and what Moshe Rabbeinu existed was Mesira and an ongoing process of Maimed Har Sinai. Korach believed that, you know, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah at Har Sinai, so now we have everything, we have the mitzvahs, and you know, whatever, we have everything at our disposal, that we don't need Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. You brought down the Torah to us, Moshe Rabbeinu, now we don't need you anymore. You don't need to be a conduit anymore. In other words, that Hashbah from Shemayim that keeps on coming down to us, that's no longer necessary. And that's the grave error. When we say the Ispalig, it doesn't mean that he split off from the other people. It means that he cut himself off from Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the conduit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, there's no Shalom, there's no Shleimus. There's no connection from down below and up above. And that's exactly what Dor HaPlaga did also. Dor HaPlaga is not only called Dor HaPlaga because they split apart from each other, but what did they split themselves off from? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They said, we're all together. We all speak the same language. We all have Dvarim Echadim. We have the same concepts. And what they wanted to do was, according to one day, they wanted to kill HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kavi Yachal, you know, whatever. They get him out of the picture. What? We don't need him anymore. We don't need that hashpah from up above. We're self-contained. And so the Ispalig is exactly the same in both of them. Korach didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu, which is a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's exactly what the Dor HaPlaga was also. And finally, the last step, which is really the first step, is why was Mitzrayim and why were Korach swallowed up by the land? Why is there such a Mishunadik Amisa? While you're alive, you get swallowed up. And I think the answer is self-evident. Normally, when does a person go back into the ground? After his life is out. When his life is out already, so then he's just flesh and bones, and that's it. He doesn't need that Hashpah anymore from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you put him back into the ground where he belongs. But Korach and the Mitzrim, who were totally Chumri, that was the nature of Mitzrayim also, the most gashmiistic society in the world. They had it all. They don't even need rain. They've got the Nilus, they're self-contained. They don't have to look up. They don't have to look at Shemayim. They don't need a Hashpah from above. Ah, that's what you think. Okay. If you live on the ground and you say that that's all that there is, then the ground comes and swallows you up. Because there is no existence in this world without a connection to the Shefa that comes from above, that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is the message, the deeper message of the Machlekes of Korach. It's not just the Machlekes of the other people, it's the Machlekes, it's a cutoff point between Korach and the people who followed him down in this world, thinking that they could do it all without a hashpah mima, without looking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This morning I went to davening and I saw there a couple of rows ahead of me, one of my very good friends in Telstone. He's a son-in-law of Damash, the Mashgiach in the Beit Zion. Today he's the Rosh Hashiva in the Beit Zion, my friend. And he was at davening, so why? Because they're on vacation already. Yeah, I remember he said to me, I think it was last year, the year before, he says, when I started working in Neve, they told me that there's three great things about this job. June, July, and August. And it's already June, you know? He gets to learn now, he's whatever, he doesn't have to worry about all the tzaras he has to deal with during the year, or whatever, June, July, and August, right? But there's a certain mindset that comes in, you know, even like Baruch Hashem, okay, we're in a serious yeshiva, and this man is, not over yet, and we still have time to go. But we all know that when it's June, July, and August, certainly if we grew up in America, pretty much we all did, and there are certain vibes and certain feelings that go along with June, July, and August. You start thinking about camp, and you start thinking about vacation, and you start thinking about watching a ball game and getting yourself a beer, and if you're a real frumi, so then, what am I doing next year, but all these things come up. All very, very earthy, artsiest dikka cheshbainis. That's the type of vibe that you think about when you get to the summer. Summer is a time for relaxing, it's a time for chilling, it's a time to kick back, take out your lounge chair, and that's what it all is. But it's one of the biggest challenges, and I say it every year, it's one of the biggest challenges of being in yeshiva, being in a regular yeshiva where you go to Rosh Chodesh Av, Tisha B'Av, some places, right? You realize that, you're coming around, it's like the final lap now, and the final lap is the most important one. Yeah, we've just got some good news from the guys in the base medrash or whatever it is, whatever. We won on a buzzer beater last night, But that's it. It changed the whole thing, that's the way that it goes. The end is what counts. The end is what counts. Not only because it's win or lose, but the end is what counts because that's when you concretize everything that you gained the whole year. It's a very, very big mistake, and please take this seriously. It's a very, very big mistake to start thinking about on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz or before Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, what am I doing on vacation when I go home? Because you ruin your last couple of weeks. Yeah, you have to devote a little bit of time. Okay, so earmark, this is my task that I'm going to take care of every night between 11:35 and 12 o'clock. That's all you need. You don't have to dream about it all day and hawk about it the whole day. Even frummer than that, don't start worrying about chavrusas now, 6 weeks before the Zman is over, right? 5 weeks before the Zman is over. Don't start making your plans for next year, whether you're coming back, you're not coming back. It's a mistake. You got to compartmentalize. If we were really, really a matzliach this week, we could have compartmentalized better also, perhaps, right? Maybe we wouldn't have been so successful. I don't know. But for sure, on a day-to-day basis, you got to realize that now these weeks, it's not a time for aretz. It's not a time for just having an early existence of kicking back and soaking up the sunshine or thinking about it. This is the last couple of weeks of just doing our thing down here and being so feg, absorbing all of the shefa from Shemayim. I've got a couple of weeks left. A month left. It'll be a very, very solid month. And Be'ezah Hashem, by looking at that, realizing that that's the point of our lives. The point of our lives is to do things down here and to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us that shefa from up above. And really, in yeshiva, so getting that shefa from up above, never feel it like you will over here. We should maximize that opportunity. It's the final lap. Don't get carried away with all the stupidity that, you know, it's not stupidity. Even the important things you can compartmentalize and worry about and take care of more effectively if you concentrate it at the 40, 45 minutes a day. But don't let it rule your life. Don't live on the ground. Live in the sky. Look for the future. Don't sell yourself short. Shoot for the stars. Don't be materialistic. Be idealistic. And if you do that, you shoot for the rakia, and you all be very, very masliach. Have a good Shabbos.